You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to BTR Boxing Podcast Network. I am your host, Sean, joined as always by Jamie for this big fight reaction show. And it is one hell of a reaction show indeed, because Anthony Joshua absolutely obliterated Francis Ngannou in two rounds on Friday evening. It was one of them moments in the sport where we sat there thinking, why didn't Tyson Fury do this before? And Tyson Fury looking very shifty when the camera pans over to him, probably thinking, this makes me look like a bit of a twonk right now. But it was absolutely what boxers should be doing against MMA fighters, 100%. And we will get into the breakdown of this short fight and everything that surrounded it. There are other undercard fights that we do want to emphasise on in this episode. Joseph Parker getting the win against Zile Zhang. I thought that was another great fight and another notable win for Joseph Parker. Nick Ball, I felt he was done over a little bit by the judging against Ray Vargas. And of course, we will talk about that in this episode, as well as a couple of the other fights that featured on this undercard. Jamie, let's go into it then. Talk about Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua. Joshua just completely obliterates him. I want to get your thoughts and feelings initially on how this played out.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Sean. My thoughts and feelings, well, there weren't really a lot of fight time to have a feeling about, was there? But, yeah, it puts... I always say the phrase, don't I? Shop window. Puts Anthony Joshua, he's putting back in the shop window. I spoke to a friend of mine earlier today, and he's got a conspiracy theory whirring around in his head that all this was contrived, you know, and how did... Well, his feeling is, how did Anthony Joshua do what the best heavyweight in the world allegedly couldn't do? And he just thinks it's all been a ploy, and they've paid Ngannou about 20 million quid just to fall. I think that's a bit outlandish, but, you know, it's good to get people talking, isn't it? Get Ngannou to fall, the 20 million quid's in the bank for Ngannou, and then you've set up a massive showdown for Fury and AJ. You know, if Fury comes through. So, you know, I suppose it adds to the narrative, but I don't believe in all that. In terms of the fight, quote marks itself, as I say, there weren't very much to look at, but it's great to see that Anthony Joshua sort of back on form. Whether you agree he is back on form, because he wasn't fighting a boxer, was he really? But I just want to give a shout out to Ben Davis for him. I know you did on your social media today, but I would also like to do the same, because it's the epitome, that partnership of boxing being a mental game rather than just a physical game. You know, it seems to be happy under Ben, so much so that, you know, he's told Derek James that he's no longer pursuing that partnership in any shape or form. And our happy AJ seems to be a destructive AJ, so yeah, great to see.
I think that's where we should start delving into this conversation, is the credit for Ben Davidson, first and foremost. I did put a post out on social media about that on X and on Facebook, and the reason being is I feel like, take everything out of this fight itself and what people might be conspiring around it, like one of your friends, Jamie, conspiring about how Ngannou's took a fall. Yes, I will address that separately, but I want to put credit on Ben Davidson, because as I said in my post a few years ago, he was noted as boxer-sized Ben. Like, he was told that he really can't come into this sport and expect to be a great trainer just through being able to be a fitness coach alone. And what Ben's done is he started out with Tyson Fury, most notably, and he's been able to get Tyson Fury into shape mentally and physically to come back against Deontay Wilder, and that first fight in particular shocked the world, really, because nobody thought Deontay Wilder, or Tyson Fury, sorry, could do what he did in that first fight, and then look where he went on to progress in his career, and then look at the work he's done with Lee Wood. Lee Wood a few years ago was probably a fighter that I wouldn't have envisaged getting to the heights that he's gotten to, and look what Ben Davidson's done for him. Criticism was heaped upon him when he threw in the towel against Mauricio Lara in the first fight with Lee Wood, but yet it seems to have been a smart decision to save Lee Wood for that second fight, and look what happened. He recaptured the world title. He was able to then go on to beat Josh Warrington when he was seemingly behind after losing every round. So yes, physically and mentally, he seems to be a very good motivator. And I've heard Devin Haney talk about him so greatly and with so much respect, and the work he's done behind the scenes with Devin Haney in some of his fights as well. So for him to do what he's done with AJ and seemingly get him back into a position where his confidence is sky high again, credit has got to be given where credit is due. Absolutely, 100%. He's motivated these fighters to get into a position where they've got that confidence to use the abilities that they have, which we've seen in the past, to implement them into their game plans and be able to be successful again. And despite the opposition that Anthony Joshua has fought in his last four fights in particular, especially this last one against Ngannou, his confidence looks like it's back. He looks like he's mentally in a better place than he was at the end of that second Usyk fight. I mean, we looked at that and thought, oh my God, he's having a mental breakdown. This really could be the end for him. But take that away now and look at where he's at. He looks like he's very confident. He looks like he's ready for that fight against the winner of Usyk versus Fury if he does get put in line for that fight first. For me, it's got to be given to Ben Davidson the credit more than anybody at the moment in time, I think, because of what I've just outlined there. And if anybody says otherwise, then I don't think you appreciate this sport, because it's people like Ben in the background that have done the work they've done with all these different fighters to get them to where they are. So AJ's confidence, AJ's strategies, his game plans have all been in part with working with Ben recently. And I think that's why I'm quite heavily praising him, because it's great to see the success of somebody who was so much ridiculed a few years ago. So yeah, credit goes to him. In regards to the fight itself, was I expecting it to play out that way? Initially, no. I thought Ngannou wouldn't be the type of fighter that would be moved. And I suppose we were basing that, myself, off the fact that Fury wasn't able to do much with him in the ring, and he wasn't able to put him away like we expected maybe to put him away. So based on that, I expected a 10-round points decision for Anthony Joshua. To put him down in the first round with a straight right hand, for me, I was like, wow. And then when I look back on the fight today, and I was talking to a friend of the show, Chris Wardrobe, again, he pointed it out as well. And he said, like, how Ngannou's defense just was lackluster. His hands were, there was no guard. His hands were up, but they were very, it was like a wide stance. And I looked back on it and I thought, you know what? You're right, Chris. It is quite a wide stance. No wonder AJ was able to go straight down the pipe with that 1-2 and hit him with that right hand that put him down. And again, the same happened when he threw the overhand right that put him out cold in the second round. His defence was literally non-existent. And I don't believe the conspiracy that your friend's saying about Ngannou took a fall. I think, why would you literally get knocked out cold for the sake of being knocked out cold when there's potentially more money on the table if you was to put in another great performance, even if it was a losing one? Now he's been beaten in that emphatic fashion, despite Joshua saying to him, stay in boxing, don't leave it. Logistically now, can he do anything in the heavyweight division, having been at the top heights, having faced allegedly the best heavyweight of this generation in Tyson Fury, and also maybe the second best heavyweight of this generation in Anthony Joshua? Is he able to do anything now in this heavyweight division, Jamie, or should he just go back to MMA?
Well, he's not really going to be welcome with open arms in MMA, is he? I'm not a big sort of MMA fan. I'm a bit like a lot of, the casuals, as they're termed, with boxing. You know, I'll tune in for the big fights, but the little ones, I don't really know what's happening. But I do know that Ngannou, you know, he cheesed off Dana White, didn't he? And Dana White certainly won't. Well, he's already said he's not going to be coming back because, you know, there were money demands made and Dana was unwilling to meet those demands. So off Ngannou trotted to boxing. So, I mean, there is the old PFA as well. Is it the PFA, Sean? I think Professional Fighting Association or something like that. And that's headed up by the Saudis. Maybe we can see him go back and do that. But is it, he's like 38 years old now, Ngannou. He's made more money than he ever did in MMA. I'd just relax. Do you know what I mean? He's got a bit of a Hollywood story there in the making. Wait for somebody to make a film about him, you know, and just earn off this little sojourn into the boxing world. He doesn't have anything to prove. He's been the UFC world champion. In the eyes of many, not myself included, I thought Tyson Fury won by a round, but in the eyes of many, he did win that fight with Tyson Fury. So, yeah, he's got nothing to be ashamed of. Just getting up after that, to be honest, and not going home in an ambulance after that knockout, he's something to be proud of. So, yeah, I wouldn't like to see him back. I think there's other business that needs to be resolved in heavyweight boxing at the moment. And, you know, we saw Joseph Parker taking a step towards world honours again. I think the little heavyweight carousel that we've got going on, it needs to exclude fighters that have only had two fights and just concentrate on the proper big boys because, you know, time's running out. I think Joseph Parker, he's 30, 31, still relatively young for a heavyweight. So, you know, perhaps focus on his story. Maybe he can, you know, this resurgence can mean him cleaning up. I don't think that's the case, but in the eyes of many, again, I think they'll be looking at what Joseph Parker's doing and thinking, you know, is he an heir apparent to the Tyson Furies, the Alexander Usyks, who I believe are going to retire after their fight. Yeah, get Ngannou out of boxing, go home, enjoy your money, let the proper boxers do it.
Well, before we talk about Zile Zhang and Joseph Parker, we'll focus again just on Anthony Joshua and the aftermath of this. We've talked about Ngannou and, you know, what you believe really should happen next for him. And I agree, I'm not really interested now in seeing anything more in the boxing world. I think when you get obliterated now at that level, it's one of them situations where you have to look at it and go, right, I've made my impact, I've made my mark by taking the lineal heavyweight champion the distance and taking him to the wire. I've got in there with another fantastic heavyweight of this generation and I've been absolutely sparkled. So I've made a lot of money out of it. I'll go back to doing what I originally did, which is fighting in the MMA world. And maybe, like you say, because he's already got a good relationship with the Saudis, maybe that MMA league that they have going at the moment, maybe that's something he can delve into and he can get paid well from, because I'm sure they would use him as a marquee selling point and a marquee star over there. So I can absolutely see him going back into that world and maybe having one or two fights there and causing some ruptions maybe in that division. So we'll see. We'll see what happens for Ngannou. But Joshua, he's been asked the question, is he waiting for the winner of Usyk Fury? And his answer was, yeah, simply, he's waiting for that fight now. He's waiting for the outcome of that fight. But ultimately, as Tyson Fury said on social media, he's given AJ credit, but he's also stated that he's got to beat Usyk twice. So naturally, that contract indicates there is two fights, no matter what happens. So if Tyson Fury got obliterated by Usyk in the first fight, there'd be a rematch no matter what happened. And I think the same would be said if Tyson Fury obliterated Usyk. So that looks like we're going to see two fights with these two guys this year, or maybe even bleeding into next year. So Anthony Joshua, he needs another fight. He needs to be back in the ring this year. He can't be waiting around for a fight against one of those fighters because he wants to stay active. And last year he was very active. I want him to be active this year. I'd like to see him fight Joseph Parker again. Naturally now, that would be the fight I would want to see. Or maybe he could fight Philippe Hrgović. That would be the alternative fight for Anthony Joshua. But the fight which would make more sense at this stage, the one that I would like to see and has more of a story behind it, is going to be the Joseph Parker fight because of what Joseph Parker's done in his last couple of fights. And we will move on to that in a short while. But just focusing on Joshua again, the two fights for him, for me, would be Philippe Hrgović, the IBF mandatory, and Joseph Parker. So that's what I'd want to see happen because I can't see him getting a fight with either Fury or Usyk this year. So he's going to want to stay active and ultimately they're the two big fights out there for him. I don't want to see him take a layup fight. I don't want to see him fight a top 15 contender because what is the point at this stage of his career? At this stage of his career, he's put himself back into contention now where a banana skin slip-up could really hinder where he wants to go as he closes in towards the end of his career. So why take a risk against a top 15 opponent? Why not take the big fights, and the Joseph Parker rematch for me would be a big fight at this stage, given what Joseph Parker's done. So we'll move on to that fight right now, Jamie, and Joseph Parker and Zile Zhang. And, you know, we've alluded to it. The victory for Joseph Parker was a great victory. He had some problems along the way, of course. He got dropped twice in that fight, but was able to dominate in parts, which allowed him to get the decision on the judges' scorecards. Having looked back on that fight now, Jamie, what were your thoughts on Parker's performance, given the shaky moments he had?
I want to point towards the trainer. I think Andy Lee's another one with a shout out, you know, a shout for being trainer of the year. You know, the man can obviously put together a game plan. He had those shaky moments, but again, the mark of a champion. Tyson Fury's been down more than most, hasn't he? I think he's been down 7-8 times in his career. And he's still, you know, he's won every belt that you can win in boxing by the central area title. So it's not about getting knocked down, as Rocky says. It's about how you get up and carry on going forward. And, you know, I've been impressed with Joseph Parker. He's always not got a stoppage, but he's just shown Andy Lee's really brought out the sort of range of motion with him, the range of shots. I don't ever think he's going to be a supreme power puncher, but I just think, you know, a smooth boxer, someone who can really sort of work well and play the long game. They're always going to have a chance to knock someone out because they can create the openings. And, you know, Joseph Parker just really impressed me there. He's fought the bogeyman, the man that nobody really wanted to fight. The new Luis Ortiz, really. Ortiz was like that for years, wasn't he? And he's come out on top. So, yeah, like you, I think that is an exciting fight, really. The Joshua and Parker one, the narrative's there. I'm not really interested in a fight with Hrgović for Joshua because I believe Zhang beat Hrgović. So yeah, there's more of a story there for Joshua if he fights Parker. Run it back and maybe see if this new and improved Joseph Parker can upset the apple cart as he keeps doing, you know?
Well, I'm going to jump straight on the back of that point because they were the words that I were going to use. What can this new and improved version of Joseph Parker do in a second fight with Joshua that he couldn't do in the first fight? Now, going back to that first fight, Joshua controlled the fight with his range and his distance, whereas what we've seen with Joseph Parker in the last two fights when he's gone up against fighters bigger than him, bigger punches than him, and he's been able to close that gap. He's been able to get on the chest of those fighters and he's been able to land on those fighters and make an impact. And whilst he might not be a concussive puncher, he has been quite smooth with his punches. He has found the range. He has worked the body quite well in his last couple of fights. And he's caused problems for those fighters in Wilder and Zhang. And as a result of that, it makes me feel like that second fight with Joshua would be a lot more competitive than the first fight. And it would really be the cherry on top of a cake for Joseph Parker beating Anthony Joshua at this stage of his career and putting himself right into contention to be the man that fights the winner of the undisputed title fight. So, yeah, I'm excited at the prospect of that happening, more so than it was the first time round, because I felt the first time round, Joseph Parker probably wasn't as recognised as a, you know, as a personality. I think he's become a more of a personality as well now, and with his association with the Furies and with him getting involved in these big fights and coming back from losses and being able to then change his style and get someone new on board in Andy Lee, who's helped develop a good relationship between the two of them, which is why I think Joseph Parker's in the position he's in, and he's working with someone who's a good tactician outside of the ring, who's helping him work to his skills and his advantages and to work to his strengths. And I think for me, that's why I would like to see that fight as a rematch, because I think it would prove for a more entertaining fight. I think it would prove for a more exciting fight between the two of them, because I think Joshua will have to engage at times as opposed to just keeping it at range. I think he will have to be a bit more fighting on the inside this time round, and I think he'll have a harder job of beating Joseph Parker if he fights him again. So that's the fight I'd like to see. But I've got to go back and just quickly mention the fight with Zhang, of course. And I mentioned a little bit earlier about the fact he got knocked down twice. And yeah, he got knocked down with short, sharp shots on the inside by Zile Zhang. But what I liked about Parker was the fact he was able to get back up and carry on. And he took the full eight count. He didn't rush to get back up. That's what I liked about it. He used his head. He didn't rush. He didn't think, oh, I'm just going to get straight back up and not give his head time to clear. He used adequate time. He looked to his corner. He obviously took advice from Andy Lee from his corner at the time these knockdowns happened. And he did the right things and he was able to weather the storm. What Zhang wasn't able to do was sustain that heavy pressure that he likes to put on fighters for the duration of the fight, which is something I think we already knew was one of the vulnerabilities in Zilei Zhang. He's obviously his age and his size, and can he go the distance? Can he be as effective later on in the fight? And it was proven in this fight in particular that he wasn't able to do that. And as a result of that, Joseph Parker was able to win those rounds to compensate for the fact he was knocked down twice. And it was a deserved victory. And Zhang at the end of it, all the sportsmen and a personality that has become more revered to, especially by us English. I think I've revered to him more over the past couple of years because he started to make more of an effort. He does a lot of interviews through a translator with English media outlets. And I like the fact that he's trying to learn a bit of English, and he makes them sort of funny comments about how he'll bang people and chat shit and get zanged. And I think it's that sort of stuff that reveres a fighter to fans and attracts you to want to see them do well. And it was one of those fights where it was two nice guys going at it and would ultimately see who the better man was on the night, and Parker was the better man on the night. So credit to both men really for putting it on the line and taking the risk to fight each other, because as a result of that fight, the WBO interim heavyweight title, as much as that might not be worth to many people, it's now in the hands of Joseph Parker. So it puts him in a good position moving forward for his career. So overall, it was an interesting fight. It was a tactical fight, and I really enjoyed the fact that Joseph Parker was able to overcome that adversity and get back up and say, do you know what, I'm not losing this fight. I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm going to adapt. I'm going to change the game plan throughout the course of the fight. And that's exactly what he did, Jamie. So all credit goes to Andy Lee and Joseph Parker, and credit to Zhang for putting on what was an interesting performance and a really, really big win, of course, for Joseph Parker. So I want to move on, Jamie, from this fight and go to the one that's probably the most talked about fight of the weekend, in the sense that it was a result that probably shouldn't have been the result that we saw. And I am talking about Nick Ball versus Ray Vargas. So Jamie, I'm going to come to you now and just want to hear about your thoughts on this fight and how you scored it, because a lot of people scored it a draw. There were a lot of fans putting their own verdicts online. I spotted that through the Boxing News app that they've done, and Boxing News kept on posting it on social about a lot of fans who had gone for the draw in this particular fight. But I want to hear your thoughts. Did you think this fight was a draw, or did you think Nick Ball won, or did you think Vargas won?
I'm with the sort of majority, well, not the majority actually, because you're saying on social media a lot of people are scoring it a draw. But the majority that could actually say, the majority that watched the fight with their eyes, rather than maybe going with the popular, you know, oh, let's be controversial. I had Ball winning the fight. I had him like 3-4 rounds up, Ball. And it was that aggression, you know what I mean? He's a little pocket rocket, isn't he? You know, Vargas didn't really, he wasn't able to play to his strengths with the height, and I was expecting to see him use more of the jab, but every time Ball come near here, he was throwing himself on the floor, wasn't he, the Muppet? So, I wasn't very happy. Wasn't very happy with the result. And that tends to be the status quo at the moment, doesn't it? If there's going to be controversy, it's almost like the judges, you know, if you would deem it controversial, let's get together and just give them a draw. Let's do that, because at least then neither party can say they lost. That's a conspiracy theory on my part. That's nobody turning around and putting that idea in my ear, a la sort of Francis Ngannou. But yeah, I just think he's going to feel hard done by. He did feel hard done by. Nick Ball's trainer at the end of the fight called Vargas a little girl, I think, or words to that effect. So yeah, there's your meat on the bone match. You know, a little bit of name calling and all that. It always sells, doesn't it? A bit of beef, as they say nowadays. But I don't think it needs beef to sell the fight. I think we need to get it over here, maybe get it in Liverpool. And if Ray Vargas is so confident that he did win the fight, well, do it in front of an away crowd. You know what I mean? You're a Mexican. I've never seen a Mexican so sort of lacking in fight as Vargas was. You know, he just didn't seem up for it at all. Rather than meeting fire with fire, which is how I think you'd beat someone like Nick Ball. He just shied away and wanted a wrestling contest. It looked a bit UFC at times. So, yeah, that's my view on it anyway.
Well, I look at the fight and I was quite disappointed with the scoring. I did initially think Ball had done enough to win the fight, and that's with no emotional bias when I talk about it, because I know how much I wanted Nick to win the fight on a personal level, because I'd seen his career from day dot all the way up to this point. So yeah, I wanted him to win. I'm not going to make no bones about that. But objectively speaking, I look at that fight and I looked at the first half of it and I thought, do you know what? Ray Vargas is boxing well. He's throwing shots. He's not necessarily landing all of the shots. They're landing on arms and they're landing on gloves, and he threw some good body shots in there, which didn't seem to faze Nick throughout the course of that fight. But I think as we started to go around the midway point of the fight, I think that's where Nick started to really find his range. He really started to be able to get on the inside and land some of those punishing shots, which were hurting Ray Vargas. And the one thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is the fact that Nick Ball scored two knockdowns in this fight. Two knockdowns. The first one felt a little bit controversial, but nevertheless, it was a punch that landed that put him on his ass, and so was the second one. So they were knockdowns. So to me, the fact that he scored them two knockdowns, the fact that I felt like he won the complete second half of the fight, I felt he won it. I did think he won it. So I was looking at the end thinking, he's got to have got the decision here. He's got to have won it. But then a little bit of pessimism in me felt like, do you know what? This is going to be one of those where they're going to look at the work of Vargas early on in the fight, and they're going to go with that, and they're going to probably put him quite highly up before Nick Ball starts to come back into the fight. And then even taking those knockdowns into consideration, you look at the 113-113 split draw, I was like, they've really just done him dirty a little bit here. And I think, like, I can feel frustrated and disappointed for the team and for Nick, because I think he did enough to win. I think a rematch has to happen. I don't know whether Vargas will take that rematch. I like to think that he has the fortitude to do it. However, I've got this suspicion that maybe, just maybe, he will creep back up a division and he will vacate that WBC title, and maybe Nick Ball will then be in line to fight for the next ranked contender for that title. That's my theory. I could be totally wrong, and the Vargas rematch could get made. And in some ways, I hope it does, because I want to see him beat him. And he was beating him and he had him down. And there was a few more times where you could see he didn't like the roughness of Nick Ball. I know people complained about that. I've seen a lot of comments about people saying how he was using too many forearms and he was pushing him around a lot. And the thing is, like you say, Jamie, and like Ricky Hatton has said many times before, boxing isn't a tickling contest. And if the referee felt like there was too much of it going on, he would have stepped in, because I felt he stepped in at times where maybe he didn't need to step in. He felt like he was breaking the action at times when he didn't need to break the action. So I think overall it wasn't too bad of a job from the referee. But if it was an issue with Nick Ball's elbows and forearms and everything else, then surely the referee would have said something at some point down the line, because Nick Ball was pushing him and sort of getting his arms on the inside. He was trying to bully him. He was trying to use a sort of Hatton tactics, really, in Hatton fights, when he used to try and bully people and push his way on the inside and use elbows and arms and whatever else to work his way in. And Vargas just didn't like it whatsoever. He didn't like it whatsoever. And as a result of that, he complained a lot. Like you said, he went down quite a bit, too many times, quite easily. It was like he was looking for the referee to take a point from Nick Ball on a few occasions. I felt that's why he was doing that. So I think it's one of them where he just couldn't deal with the pressure. He couldn't deal with the constant in-your-face style of Nick Ball. And as a result of that, he didn't play to Vargas' strengths. He weren't able to negate it. And he lost that fight to me. I'm not going to say a complete robbery, because I've seen worse. I've absolutely seen worse. Again, it's all about what the judges interpret when they watch those fights. Did they like the work of Ray Vargas and his ability to throw them shots? And whilst a lot of them landed on arms and gloves, and he did throw quite a few good body shots in there on Nick Ball, was that enough for the judges? Is that what they saw? Because I believe that's probably what they saw, or at least two of them did anyway. But for me, I liked the aggressiveness. I liked the fact that he was always putting Vargas on the back foot. I liked the way he was able to eventually get through and start to hurt him throughout the course of the fight. And I felt like he won the whole second half of the fight. And if you include the knockdowns in that, I felt like he'd won it by about three rounds. So rematch has to happen. But like I say, Jamie, I think he's going to go up a weight again and vacate. And Nick Ball fights for the vacant title. Either way, Nick Ball has shown everybody in the last two fights that he belongs at that level.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you talk about being invested. I actually commentated on Nick Ball's second fight at the Boulders Exhibition Centre. So I'm still waiting to, you know, say that I commentated our world champion, because I commentated on Lyndon Arthur's debut and Zelfa Barra's debut as well. So I suppose I'm even more emotionally invested. Do you know what I mean? I would certainly agree with what you're saying. Yeah, just stay around that weight. You know, he's not going to, don't move up, tiny, isn't he? And just wait to pick up the scraps, as cynical as that is. But yeah, he should have won on the night. He won by at least three rounds. That was my opinion.
Well, a lot of people feel quite indifferent about it. I think the majority feel like Nick Ball got the win on this night. And hopefully, like I say, they will run it back, Jamie. But if they don't and Vargas moves up, hopefully Nick Ball will get an opportunity. But as I said before, I think he belongs at this level. He's proven it now. In the space of those two fights, absolutely belongs at this level indeed. So I'm going to move on then and round up the rest of the card. Mark Chamberlain, Gavin Gwynn. It was a fight which I knew was going to live up to expectations. I knew it was going to be a battle between the two of them, with Gwynn's style being a slugger coming in against Mark, who can box and punch. I knew it was going to be an interesting fight. What I wasn't expecting was Gavin to get a big bit of swelling around his right eye so early on in the fight, and Mark was able to then capitalise on that, and his selection of punches was really good, and ultimately he beat Gavin Gwynn into submission, not on his own accord, of course. The referee stepped in, but at the same time the towel was coming in the fourth round, and Mark Chamberlain goes 15-0, and I don't know what the relationship is there with Turki Alal Sheikh, but Mark Chamberlain was personally selected to fight on this particular card, and he's done well going over there and putting himself in that limelight and that shop window, as you like to say, Jamie, because now in this division, it's going to start moving on and looking for big victories. And I think this was a good victory for him on the domestic stage in particular. And when you look at this division as a whole and look how competitive it is up at the top end of the division, he certainly put himself on the radar to be in with a potential big fight going forward. I think he definitely needs to be targeting some bigger fights going forward now. I think he's proven that, you know, he can beat guys that have mixed it with great opponents. I think he needs to move on. I think he needs to move up. And I think if he's got that backing behind him now, which seemingly he has, I don't think it's going to be long before we start to see him creeping up and looking for those big fights, especially against some of the top 10 guys that are out there. So that was a really, really good win for him. Another fight on the card was Madrimov against Barnov. 9-0-1 against 25-0. It was the vacant WBA super welterweight crown, which, of course, was vacated by Jamal Charlo, and give these two guys the opportunity to become champion. Khabanov, who we'd previously seen against Liam Smith, was looking to get that victory, but Madrimov was just absolutely sublime. He systematically broke down Khabanov in this fight to get the stoppage in five rounds to become the champion. And Madrimov's definitely going to be a name that's going to start to really come into the mainstream now in this division. And when we're talking about this division, we're looking at the likes of Tim Zhu being the natural successor. Of course, Charlo is still there at the moment, and there are some big fights on the table. And I think now him being a champion and him having the WBA title certainly puts him in position for a big fight in this particular division. And also in the heavyweight division, Justice Honey against Kevin Lorena was a fight which on paper looked a little bit overmatched, and at times it seemingly felt like it could be overmatched when Justice Honey was hurt on a couple of occasions. But he ground out a brilliant victory over 10 rounds against a former champion in Kevin Lorena. And I think for me, having that big win on his resume against a guy who had all the experience in the world, and he had that opportunity against Daniel Dubois, and he was fighting for that WBA title, and obviously he's held intercontinental versions, he's won the IBO cruiserweight title before. Obviously moving up to heavyweight for him has been a difficult time, and I think they were talking a lot in the commentary about him going down to that bridgeweight division and fighting for a title there. But going up against a big heavyweight in Justice Honey was Yeah, it was one of them where you look at the match on paper and you think to yourself, you're expecting Llerena maybe to be in here, but Justice Honey was able to overcome the adversity in this fight. And, you know, he did well in getting that decision, I thought. I think he, for him to be able to come back the way he did after being hurt on a couple of occasions, was testament to where his career's going and how quickly they've matched him in this particular fight. So I am interested to see where his career does get taken following this particular fight. And also on the undercard, I mentioned in the preview, Andrei Nowitzki, a fighter who we interviewed last year when he just had his first professional fight. He's now 10 fights into his career and he got a KO in the third round against Juan Torres on this card. If you didn't see that particular fight, Jack McGann lost to Lewis Green in a first round TKO for Lewis Green, which was a big, big win for him, of course, on this stage. Roman Fury, younger brother of Tyson, got a points win on this card. And also Ziad Alamayouf got a points win, moving him to 5-0 on this particular card. But overall, it was an interesting watch. It was strange watching it on the Friday. It was strange to sort of come up Saturday morning and think, usually I'm preparing for a big fight weekend on this night, but tonight's not the night. It was the previous night. It was really, really good to see the reactions on social media of positivity towards Anthony Joshua following this victory, and how people do genuinely feel that he has returned to a Joshua of old. But I think we're only really going to know that when he gets into that elite level fight again. And having been beaten off Usyk twice, the natural fight that maybe we do want to see we haven't yet is, of course, the Fury fight. And a lot of people think, like, based on his last four performances, that he would beat Fury. And as I said at the start of the show when I talked about this fight, Fury's face kind of told everybody the story, which was maybe a little bit of embarrassment. Some people think it was fear that Joshua might actually do him in a fight. I don't think it is. I probably think it's more embarrassment that Joshua's put him away the way he did. But to be honest, Fury was quite complimentary about Joshua in the aftermath. You know, he expected Joshua to do what he did. He said one round, but it ended in two. And I think a fight between them two would be massive, absolutely massive, and there would be value to it if Fury beats Usyk and he has to beat him again for a second time in a contractual rematch. And if Joshua stays active and gets wins over the likes of Joseph Parker, further adding to his notoriety and his claim to be that person to face Fury or Usyk for the undisputed heavyweight crown, I think we could have a major, major fight on our hands other than this undisputed title fight. It is all in theory, of course. It is quite exciting, the potential of these two getting in the ring. It's always been something we've really wanted. A couple of years ago, it was on the cards and then it wasn't on the cards. And at that time, it was quite an exciting prospect and it wasn't able to happen. I think there'd be value in it as long as Fury wins and as long as Joshua continues to. But either one of them slips up en route to that fight, and the value completely goes. And you could put them together, but I don't think it would be the same value. I don't think people look at it in the same way if one of them does slip up at this point. Of course, Joshua has lost three times in his career. Fury hasn't yet. He remains to be beaten. So I think if that continues to be the case, as I've said, value definitely. Any one of them slip up, value goes down, in my personal opinion. Anyway, I'm sure the Saudis would happily, absolutely. But it has been great to sort of see the event take place. I was excited about it. It was a really interesting event and really good to see Anthony Joshua showing that boxing is the more dominant sport. Of course, people will argue otherwise. UFC fans will argue otherwise. But when you've got crossover fights like this, as a boxing fan, you expect the boxer to be taking the MMA fighter out. And that's exactly what happened here. And Joshua proved that it can be done. Whereas Fury probably didn't train like he should have trained for that fight. And I think it's quite evident now that if a fully fit Tyson Fury was in the ring that night, maybe would have seen something similar to what we saw on Friday night. But that pretty much rounds up that particular card and the big fight night from this past weekend. I want to do a bit of housekeeping as we come towards the end of the episode and just again remind everybody to go and tune in to our Legendary Nights Season 4 podcast. It is out there in its entirety now, 10 full episodes. If you haven't already listened to the show, please do go back and listen to the show. We've got 10 after shows for each episode as well with Lukey. It's always great to get Lukey back on the show and get his infinite wisdom and all these monologues that he puts into the show. It's really great to hear his opinions on certain moments in time. So please do go back and listen to those episodes. Career Profiles is the next show. If you haven't already heard me say that, I'll say it again. That will be the next series-based content that will be coming out in the next few weeks. We will drop a promotional video for the show to give you an incline of what we're actually going to be covering in this round of Career Profiles. So do look out for that on social media. But if you haven't heard any of the Career Profiles episodes yet and you're relatively new to us and you've not tuned into what we do, go back and listen to them. There's quite a few. I think there's about 48 in total on that Career Profiles podcast feed. So please do go back and listen to some. There's some great stories on there. Absolutely fantastic stories like Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, Sugar Ray Leonard, Thomas Hearns, Prince Nazim Hamed, Nigel Benn, Frank Bruno, Charlie Burley. They're just to name a few. It's quite a few very well-known fighters on that list of our Career Profiles podcast. So please go and listen to it to find out more about their life and their fights and their big notable moment and all the great stories we pulled together for those episodes. The Darker Side of Boxing, that's another show that will be returning this year for its next season in the summer. And we'll be looking forward to bringing that back to the mainstream as well. So please do go and check out The Darker Side of Boxing if you haven't done so already. I want to take the opportunity now to say thank you to the patrons on patreon.com for subscribing to us separately and providing us with some additional financial support to allow us to continue with all these great series and these great episodes that we put out there on a regular basis. Big thank you to you guys. We hope you've been enjoying your series-based content, having it early and getting ad-free versions of it on the private feed. And of course, you've probably all listened to the patron-only content and Boxing Through the Decade series as well. So if you haven't already listened to that, guys, go back and listen. But I'm aiming this at you guys that haven't subscribed to us on Patreon. If you are in a position to do so, please do go and subscribe to us on Patreon. For as little as £3 a month, you will be able to get access to all that additional content that we don't release to the general public. You will get series-based content earlier than everybody else, and you will also get every episode ad-free. Now, I know you can skip ads on Spotify, and you can do it on Apple and any podcast app, but it's just a little extra for you when subscribing to us. And that £3, £5, £10, whichever tier that you pick, it massively helps us. The more people that we can get, even if it was on the minimum tier of £3, the more you guys could subscribe to us in that way, the more opportunities we have to bring more people into the fold to help us with the podcast and do the video production and do the research for us and allow us to produce more regular content with the series-based stuff. And we are looking at venturing in to more video-based podcasts as well in the future. So that'll be a potential with that support to really take that the next step. And bearing in mind, as I always say, we're independent, we're not financed, we don't actually have a sponsor per se. So if you do know anybody as a business that could actually sponsor us for the year, we would love to talk to them. We would love to get that support from them and allow us to do everything that we've said we want to do. So please do get in contact with us if you are in a position to subscribe to us via Patreon, or you're a business owner or you know a business owner that would benefit from host-read ads on these episodes and these series-based content that we put out there. Please contact me at beyondtheropesboxingpodcast@gmail.com. That would be a great way to get the conversation going. Now, for everybody else, if you haven't subscribed to us, you can do so on Apple, on Spotify, on Google, or on any other available podcasting app of your choice out there. Just type in BTR Boxing Podcast and you will see this podcast feed. And if you type it in, you should also find the other podcast feeds as well. If you're not following us on social media, you can do so on Twitter at BTR Boxing Pod, or you can find us on Facebook, Beyond the Ropes Boxing Podcast, or BTR Boxing Podcast Network. You can find us on Instagram on the same handle. You can find us on TikTok on the same handle. If you listen to us on YouTube, please keep going on there and liking and also putting the comments in the boxes below the videos if you are listening to the podcast that way. Honestly, it really helps. It really gives people an insight to what the shows are about and what we're actually covering in these shows. So please keep doing that. Really, really helps us. If you've not already found any of our social media handles, it's pretty easy to find us. Type in BTR Boxing Podcast Network on Google or whatever search engine you use, and you'll find all of the stuff out there on social media that we do. And every episode will already be linked into it. So please keep going and subscribing. Keep liking and sharing and doing everything that's necessary to help us get to that next level as a podcast outfit. But that is it for this particular episode of the Big Fight Reaction Show. Myself and Jamie will be back a little bit later in the week as we look to cover next weekend's fights with a Frank Warren Queensbury Promotions card, which we're looking forward to. So please tune in to us a little bit later on in the week for that show as well. But for now, it's good evening. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on the BTR Boxing Podcast Network.
The dream is made real. Ricky Hatton rocks the world.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
Wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
It's over. Mamma mia, he's done it. Anthony Joshua defeats Vladimir Klitschko.
Podcast Network.